The following recording was produced by Christ Redeemer Church of Hanover, New Hampshire. The speaker is Doug Cooper. You may find more information on the church and its various resources on the web at www.christredeemerchurch.org.
So let's turn our hearts today to the word of the Lord for us for today. Take it from Proverbs chapter 1, and it runs 33 verses. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity. To give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us. We will all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. For their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. Wisdom cries aloud in the street. In the markets she raises her voice. At the head of the noisy streets she cries out. At the entrance of the city gates she speaks. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? If you turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make my words known to you. Because I have called and you refuse to listen, have stretched out my hand and no one has heeded, because you have ignored all my counsel and would have none of my reproof, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror strikes you, when terror strikes you like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. Then they will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, would have none of my counsel and despised all of my reproof. Therefore, they shall eat the fruit of their way and have their fill of their own devices. For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them. But whoever listens to me will dwell secure and will be at ease without dread of disaster. The word of the Lord for today.
Thank you, Mark. I was even noticing, I was just like, do Mark and Ezra have the same frames? I'm gonna have to give a closer look. Maybe I'm seeing things. No pun intended. Well, with that reading from Mark right there, we are officially underway. This is our first message in our new sermon series that is taking place in the Old Testament book of Proverbs. And the book of Proverbs, in case you might not know this, is what we would commonly call wisdom literature. And this is not the only book in the Bible that you could attach this label to. However, I think it's safe to say that this is the most well-known of the wisdom literature books that we find there. And I would also say that this is a very unique book. It's truly unique. Within the Bible, I would say that it is a one of a kind. You won't find another one quite like it. And here's what I mean by that. Comprised of 31 chapters, it comes to us in a very specific, very particular sort of a package. And the way that it comes to us is in the form of Proverbs, right? Pretty obvious, I know. But it does raise the question, though. What is a proverb? What are proverbs? This is one of the central things that we're going to want to try to get at in this introductory message this morning. What is a proverb? And we'll try to answer that question in just a moment. But in terms of the format of this book itself, I would say this much, just in terms of how all of you might just kind of adjust your expectations going forward into this series. The book of Proverbs does not quite work like other books. And this is why you've probably never sat under a sermon series, an extended sermon series, in the book of Proverbs. I'd be interested to know if anybody has before. Has anyone? Okay. To my point, I saw, I think, maybe one hand, perhaps. In other words, generally speaking, it doesn't follow a narrative form, not in the way that a psalm does, not in the way that an epistle does, or a historical account such as Genesis or Exodus might. At times, like chapter 1 here, it sort of does, right? But at other times, it doesn't. And so it will require us to approach the book in a somewhat more topical fashion than maybe we normally would. And this should make more sense, what I'm saying here, once we begin to answer this question, what is a proverb? But here's a far more important question than that. What is wisdom? What is wisdom? A proverb is a form of wisdom literature, but what is wisdom? If somebody asked you, if somebody cornered you, said, hey, tell me, describe it for me, what is wisdom, how might you answer that question? Or how about this? How does wisdom compare to knowledge? How might those two things be similar in certain ways? How might they be different from one another? And then most important question of all, central to what we want to talk about this morning, is this question. What makes God's wisdom that we find here in the book of Proverbs, what makes it unique? Because it is. What makes God's wisdom unique? And so this isn't a question of format. This is a question of content. What makes God's wisdom different from other forms and other collections and other approaches to wisdom? Because there are many of them. This is the most essential thing that we want to try to uncover together this morning. And we'll want to actually stay with that question throughout this entire series. What makes God's wisdom unique? All right. And so getting started here, please think of this as think of this as a very introductory sort of a message that is intended to lay a foundation for us as we get going here at the start. And before I provide us with a bit of an outline, allow me to just make one aspirational comment at the beginning, if I could. I keep using the word unique, probably overusing it. Probably will continue to overuse it. But as we come into this series, my hope and my prayer is that this will be a unique time for us as a church. And I think it can be because wisdom itself, and by that I mean God's wisdom, is utterly unique. And I think that we are all in short supply of it. And yet, please get this. God freely and abundantly offers it to us. He offers us his wisdom. It's pictured for us It's personified for us in the book of Proverbs is a sage woman who is crying out in the streets. She's calling out to us. She's bidding us to come to her, to sit at her feet, to learn from her. She offers it to us. It's described for us as being more precious than silver, more precious than gold and anything else you might find. And the Lord gives it to those who will ask for it and who will seek it. This is good news. This is very encouraging. And so please, I would urge you, join me in that hope and in that prayer that as we enter into this journey together in Proverbs, that God would bless it, that he would use this time in very powerful ways in our lives, individually, families, and in our lives as a church. And so now here is an outline for you. I've got three things for us because that's the wise thing to do, right? King Solomon tells us this. If you go to another one of his books, the book of Ecclesiastes, he says a triple braided rope is not easily broken. So I'm trying to follow his good counsel, his wise counsel. So three things for us in the form of three questions. One, what is the story here? What's the story here? Here we're just going to get into some of the background. Like, what is it that we need to know about this book? The details, the whos, the whens, the how comes, these sorts of things. And then we'll set down a few definitions as well. Second question, why wisdom? Why wisdom? And we'll see it's always been a hot commodity. Wisdom is nothing new. Why is wisdom so important? And how is wisdom often misrepresented? This is something we're going to try to tackle in this point as well. Last question, what's so unique, I've already said it, but we've got to talk about it. What's so unique about God's wisdom? What's so unique about it? So one more time on those. What's the story here? Why wisdom? And then what is so unique about God's wisdom? So first question, what's the story here? In other words, what's some of the critical background on this book that it might be helpful for us to know about? And we get a pretty good start right in the first couple of verses there. And I'm going to have us just look at verse 1 as it relates to the authorship of the book. Please look back with me. It says, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. And so what we learn straight away here is that none other than the king of Israel is behind this book of wisdom. And it may be helpful to point out that he didn't write all of it. He didn't write all 31 chapters of the book, as we'll eventually see when we get to some of the later chapters. You'll begin to learn that there are other people who are involved. But rather, there are other writers contributing to a collection. So I think, and a lot of people think this way, that King Solomon, he's the main contributor here, but he's also kind of like the curator. He's pulled these things together. He's compiled them for us, this collection of wise writings. In fact, what we learn in other places in the Old Testament is that the wisdom of Solomon was world-renowned. I'm going to read for you here just after I take a quick drink here, but I'm going to be reading from 1 Kings chapter 4. This is really, really interesting. Gives us background. It gives us insight. There we read, and God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure, in breadth of mind like the sand on the seashores, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all other men, wiser than Ethan the Ezhite, in Heman, Kelkal, and Darda, and the sons of Mahal, and his fame was in all the surrounding nations. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees, from the cedar that is in Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the wall. He spoke also of beasts and of birds and of reptiles and of fish. And people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon and from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. And so we learn at least two things in what I just read right there. One, that King Solomon was supremely, supremely wise, and two, that it was God that made him that way. God made him wise. God gave him this incredible wisdom and learning. We learn that prominent people sought out Solomon from far and wide to learn of his wisdom. And along with that, we essentially learn that wisdom and Proverbs even were not unique to Israel. In fact, we get the names of other places, specific people's names in the passage that I just read there. And so that provides us with some helpful context, I think. To know that at the time that this was written, and most people date the book of Proverbs somewhere around 700 BC, that this quest for wisdom was alive and well. It was very active. It actually preceded Solomon. And that compiling of wisdom literature was really a thing. People were really curating wisdom at this time. This was an ancient practice. People saw great value in wisdom and in wisdom literature. And so we have to now ask that question. Well, what is wisdom? What is wisdom? How might we describe it? And I think we get some great help here in verses 2 through 4. We're provided with some helpful synonyms. Synonyms, you know, can really help us to put together a definition. We also get some helpful categories. I'm going to start again at verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Now verse 2. To know wisdom and instruction. To understand words of insight. To receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, in equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. This might be a good spot to point out that this whole book does seem to be aimed at youth. It's applicable for anybody, but I just want to point out, it does seem to be aimed at the youth. In this day and age, this would have served as instruction for young boys who were coming of age. It was intended to prepare them for all of life, for all of decision making. It was meant to train them to have insight into a great many things, matters of morality, matters of society, matters of relational interaction with others. And the word insight, I think, is a really helpful word in trying to sort out, what is wisdom? What are we talking about? And you can hear it in the word itself. What is insight? As one person put it, it involves us seeing into the inner character or underlying truth of someone. It's about the inner person and their vision, their understanding of things. They also wrote, it has to do with apprehending the true nature of a thing, especially through intuitive understanding. In other words, it's more than knowledge. It's more than mere knowledge. It's one thing to know something, to possess information about something. It's another thing altogether to understand that thing and to use that knowledge and that information in good and useful ways. When we talk about that, we're getting closer to understanding what wisdom is. Wisdom is more than just the acquisition of information. It involves good and beneficial practices, putting knowledge to good use. For instance, I just recently heard someone describing the difference between knowledge and wisdom. I liked this a lot. Knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad. You see? The difference between knowledge and wisdom? So what's a proverb then? Okay. Proverb is a form of wisdom literature. And that's a tricky thing to define, I think. Several commentators have pointed this out, that it's so varied that it's difficult to nail it down. But here is one, I'm going to still offer up a definition. Here's one that I came across. I think this is a really helpful one, and it's coming from a good source. There's a gentleman by the name of Wolfgang Meter. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. He was born in Germany. He spent most of his life here in the States. He worked as a professor at the University of Vermont for 50 years. And he was a specialist in German and in folklore. He's retired now. He's still living. He's 80 years old at this point, I believe. And his specialty was his study in knowledge of Proverbs. He was what you would call a perimologist. I'd never come across this word, so forgive me for stumbling over it, which means the study of, of Proverbs. Okay, in fact, one person said of him that he's the magister proverbium, a perimologist without peer. So, smart guy. Translation, really smart, as it pertains to Proverbs, okay? And I'll say more about him in a bit, but here is his definition for us, okay? A proverb is a short, generally known sentence of the folk, like us, which contains wisdom, truth, morals, and traditional views in a metaphorical, fixed, and memorizable form, and which is handed down from generation to generation. So proverbs are, they're pithy, they are memorable, they often consist of these short, stabbing sentences that just kind of like find their way, like worming into your head. They have a way of grabbing your attention, getting to the point quickly, and they're meant to provide insight into the heart and into the nature of things, to get underneath things. It's an art form, really. It's a beautiful thing. And as he said, the good ones get handed down from generation to generation. They're meant to train. They're meant to educate the youth, kind of like what we get in the first few verses of our book here. And in order to make them wise in all manners of life, all affairs of life. And again, they were everywhere at this time. They were everywhere, even before Solomon came along. I'm just going to give you one example that I came across, all right? This is an ancient Sumerian proverb. You won't find this in the book of Proverbs in the Old Testament. And it's about living within one's own means, okay? They wrote this, "Build like a lord, go about like a slave. Build like a slave, go about like a lord." I don't know if that grabbed you there. I'll try to explain it. In other words, if you go around blowing all your money, it'll put you in the poorhouse. But if you learn to live in a thrifty way, you just might acquire wealth over time. That's what it's saying. Right? This actually reminds me of an old adage that my dad used to use with me, and that you might know. This might sound familiar to you. And by the way, I think that that's helpful. Like an adage really is kind of like a proverb. I mean, they're essentially the same thing. My dad would say to me when I was spending my money too quickly or spending more money than I had, he would say, "You shouldn't have a champagne taste on a beer budget." You guys heard this before? Yeah. Shouldn't have a champagne taste on a beer budget. There's loads of these. Loads of them that you guys know. You don't even know you know them, but you know them by heart. Well, let's test this out. You guys ready? A picture is worth 1,000 words. It's better to be safe than the early bird. Don't make a mountain. The grass is always greener. Where there's a will. Let's see if you guys know this one. This one might be a little tougher. A rolling stone. Wow. Okay. So you see what I'm saying? Like, this is a thing. This is a real thing. I'll share two more with you that I this is why I brought up Wolfgang Wieder from University of Vermont. He pointed out that there are local proverbs in most places that really kind of like highlight a place and a time, and I thought that these ones were real neat. I've got two of them for you. Here's one. So this is a local proverb to Vermont, which we're close to. I think that maybe we get that kind of, at least the New England mentality. Talk less and say more. Well, you know this. Talk less and say more. Does anybody else know that? Okay, there you go. And that's sage advice, if you understand what's being said there. It's sage advice. Here's another one that I think might be a spin on another old adage. The world is a cow, but you have to do the milking. You know? I mean, that's great, I think, because obviously when you think of Vermont, you should think of cows. And when you think of New Englanders, you should think of hard-working people, right? You're like, the world is a cow, but you have to do the milking. So that was some background. Those were some definitions for us. But now the second question, okay? Why, though? Why wisdom? It's ancient, And as we just saw a moment ago, it's also modern. It's been around. It's still around. Why wisdom? Why is it such a lasting and universal thing? And yet, why is there seemingly so little of it to be found around in the world, in our own lives? We need some insight here, don't we? We need some wisdom about wisdom. The reason why we need some wisdom about wisdom, I think, is because there's a whole lot of pseudo-wisdom out in the world. There's a whole lot of pseudo-wisdom. There's a never-ending supply of alluring but also very empty knowledge out in the world that's essentially being spun as wisdom. I come across it quite a bit. A few years ago, I finally took the social media plunge. I had never gotten on the Facebook wagon, but a couple years ago, I got on the Instagram train, okay? And there's some things about it I really like and that I really find helpful, and then there's a whole lot of things that I would not describe that way. And what I think I'm learning with time is that it doesn't provide a whole lot of wisdom. It doesn't. Lots of information, very little wisdom. And then in addition to that, I come across a whole lot of, I guess you could call it like suggested wisdom, people offering you their insights. In fact, I seem to have created some kind of an algorithm that feeds me a lot of this stuff. I get more and more of it. I get a lot of these short videos where people are trying to tell me that they have a secret that can change my life. You know? But none of it seems to work, I'll just tell you. In fact, you never quite seem to arrive at it. You just kind of keep getting strung along. And it's just like, okay, I'm ready. Some of it reminds me of what we used to call infomercials. You remember these? And that's not all, right? And for a limited time, for just 4 easy installments of $19.99, you can also receive our really, really special wisdom, right? But it isn't just that sort of thing. I want to be careful not to just paint Instagram even into a corner. Not all of it is a bunch of marketing stuff per se. In fact, I think that some of it involves people who are sharing things and who are really well-intended. And I've actually found some really great things along the way. I'll also say that. It's just that a lot of it, even the well-intended stuff, doesn't seem to possess wisdom. And I'm guessing that this has always been the case, that there has always been pseudo-wisdom or just like not great wisdom out there, which would explain why people were traveling and they didn't have trains and they didn't have cars and airplanes. People were traveling great distances to seek out the wisdom of Solomon. They wanted the real thing, the real McCoy. And it seems that the bunk wisdom that's out there and its allure comes down to, in my mind, wrong intent. Wrong intent from the ones offering it, and likewise, perhaps, wrong intent from those trying to acquire it. In other words, why wisdom? Why? What do we want from it? What are we hoping to get from the wisdom that we might be seeking out? Are we looking for a loophole of some kind? Are we looking for a fast track? Do we want quick success? You know, somebody, give me the passcode. How do I get there faster? Are we looking to hop on the wisdom train in order to acquire fame and fortune, to get the girl or the guy, to secure a cushy situation, to get an early retirement, to get that nest egg? Why? Why are we out to get it? Why wisdom? I think these are important questions. And ironically, the wisdom that we find here in the book of Proverbs has a whole lot to say about these very same things that I'm pointing out. It uncovers these things. It has insight into these things. God provided Solomon with great wisdom and learning in order to help you and I and those under our care to get insight into these very same sorts of things. And so much more, and it's really profound. And so much of what we find in this book does come, actually, in the form of warning us to be mindful of these very things. Don't go the way of the fool. Don't listen to the fool. Listen instead to the wise. go the way of the wise. Don't be allured away by those seeking bloodshed. It's what we get right there in verses 10 through 19 that Mark read for us. We'll hear a great deal in future chapters saying, don't be lured away by the enticing woman. Instead, listen to the sage woman of wisdom. Sit at her feet. Learn from her. Listen to the wisdom of your mothers. Listen to the wisdom of your fathers. And you see much of this carrying over, actually, this is an interesting thing to think about. You see much of this carrying over into the teaching of Jesus, actually. Instead of the way of the fool and the way of the wise, he often speaks of the wide way that leads to death and the narrow way that leads to life, and few there are who find it. He spoke a great deal in parables, which work much like Proverbs do. They're riddlesome on the surface. For those who are willing to sit with them, those willing to learn from Jesus, those willing to sit at his feet, those who would treasure his words within themselves, to them God grants divine wisdom. It's interesting when you make the comparison to the pseudo-wisdom. A lot of times it's being presented in a very simple way, but when you try to understand it, it gets very riddlesome. And it comes at a cost. Often the people trying to give you wisdom are trying to take something from you. But God gives it freely. It seems a bit riddlesome at the top. But when you get into it, it's actually quite simple and yet profound. And I'm already into it, but this leads us into our last question now. What makes God's wisdom unique? Please look back with me at verses 5 through 7. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. And then we get verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. This is a repeated sentiment throughout the scriptures. You can also find it in other places in Proverbs itself. If you go to jump ahead to chapter 9, you'll read this. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. So what does this mean? What does this mean that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge? At the very least, I think we can say that whatever it means, whatever it might mean, it seems very unusual. Okay? It's not operating in the ways that we might think. I think it would make a lot more sense if you were to say something like, humility is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom. Teachability is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom. But it does not say that. It says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom. And so what does that mean? What is the fear of the Lord? There's a lot that we could say about this. Rather than trying to define it, I'm going to try to illustrate it. In one of my commentaries on Proverbs, the author used an example from the wind and the willows, which I'm a big fan of, so I was just like, all right, I got to use that. So I'm going to use that right now. Hopefully this will be helpful to you as it was for me. The commentator writes this. Remember the wind and the willows? When rat and mole go looking for the baby otter and stumble into the presence of God? Has anybody read Wind of the Willow, by the way? Okay, quite a few. All right. And they stumble into the presence of God, and then he quotes from this part of the book, and I'll share it with you here. Quote, suddenly, the mole felt a great awe fall upon him, an awe that turned his muscles to water, bowed his head, and rooted his feet to the ground. It was no panic terror. Indeed, he felt wonderfully at peace and happy. Rat, he found breath to whisper, shaking. Are you afraid? Afraid? Of him? Oh, never, never. And yet, oh mole, I am afraid. That's curious. And a really good description of the fear of the Lord, I think. And we're going to explore this idea throughout the series, because this is so important. This is so central to understanding God's wisdom. So just consider this a bit of an introduction on this topic. But what I think this should tell us is that wisdom is not merely the acquiring of information. Rather, true wisdom begins with a true encounter with the origin of all wisdom. It must begin there. It begins with an encounter with the all-wise God, the creator of the heavens and the creator of the earth, our creator, the very one who sustains us, the very one who sustains all things, the one who has insight into all things, including you. He has insight into you. He has insight into me. He is the beginning of all knowledge in all wisdom. And this is going to sound a whole lot like something that I had said last week when I was trying to describe prayer. But wisdom isn't so much about knowing something. Wisdom has much more to do with knowing someone. And this is what makes God's wisdom so utterly unique. Very different from any other kind of wisdom that you might find in the world, because it's personal. It's divinely relational. It comes through engagement with God, and it can come no other way. It can come no other way. You can't have God's wisdom without God. You can't. There's no shortcut. There's no loophole. And along these same lines, God is not a means to an end. He isn't the means by which we reach our goal of obtaining wisdom, like, oh, okay, this is how I get the wisdom. All right, I'll go through God, I guess, if that's what I got to do. No, rather, God is both the means and the end. It's in knowing him and sitting at his feet and living in proximity to him, him rubbing off on us, if I can put it that way, that we begin to become the recipients of wisdom, because he is wisdom. He is the embodiment of wisdom. He is the origin of wisdom. Without him, there is no wisdom. And this is like utterly counterintuitive to the wisdom of the world. It's unique. In the New Testament, Jesus is referred to as the wisdom of God. Listen to how this gets expressed. This is Paul speaking in the first chapter of his letter to the church in Corinth. He writes this: where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God, through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. The wisdom of God is deeply personal. And if you like your wisdom to be impersonal, then you won't want God's wisdom. You should pass on it. But I would encourage you not to. It's a wisdom that lived. It's a wisdom that died. It's a wisdom that bled for us. The wisdom of God is serious business. It's not an intellectual pursuit. It involves our intellect. It can result in us growing in our intelligence. It can make us deeply insightful. But first and foremost, it is personal. And in the eyes of the world, it can make a fool out of you. Do you want it? Who wants to sign up to be a fool? Anybody? Sounds very advantageous. Where do I sign? This reminds me of a short, almost proverbial parable that comes to us from Jesus. Very short. He said this: the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then, in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. To anyone who might have known this man, they would have called him a fool. Like, what are you doing, bub? You just sold everything that you've got to just go buy an empty field? Have you lost your mind? What are you doing? And yet, he was acting in divine wisdom. He had encountered real treasure. He hit the jackpot. The fear of the Lord could be described as the thing that you fear to lose most of all. To fear the Lord is to value him so very highly that you fear not to follow him. That you fear not to hear his voice calling out for you in the streets. That you fear not to experience his wisdom. That you fear to disappoint him. That you fear to distrust him. In other words, you value him more than silver and gold and anything of great price. This is the beginning of wisdom. Okay. And hopefully this is a good foundation that has been laid for us as we continue on in the book of Proverbs. Let me pray for us. Father, over and over again, when I come to the end of these messages, God, I'm just absolutely struck by how generous you are and how abundant you are, how freely you give of yourself, how much you aspire to cause us to be rich in yourself. Help us to treasure the right things, God. May we treasure your wisdom, and by that I mean, may we treasure you. Teach us, God. We are often foolish. I'm often so foolish, Lord. Wise us up in the reality of your Son. And it's in his name we pray. Amen. All right. We're going to break for a little bit, for about 5 minutes or so. And then we're going to meet right back here. Bathrooms are to the right once you go through these double doors if you don't know where they are. There's a water fountain by the bathrooms as well if you need a drink. Maybe take an opportunity to say hello to someone.
I'll send you a link, and if I fail to send you a link, remind me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan.